Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, with you for an hour of comedy. Later on in the hour, we'll enjoy the first Niter program from 1948, but right now an episode of The Eddie Cantor Show from June 5th, 1946 on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bristol-Myers, makers of Eye Panna for the Smile of Beauty and True Shade, the Beforehand Lotion, presents The Eddie Cantor Show with Burt Gordon, the Mad Russian, Leonard Sousa's orchestra, our special guest, the star of Roberta, now playing at the Philharmonic Auditorium, Luba Molina, yours truly, Harry Von Zell, and starring Eddie Cantor.
Do you love me? Tell me, do you? Do I really mean the whole world to you? Do you get a glimpse of heaven when your lips meet mine? Do nightly dreams of me pursue you? Do I thrill you when I cuddle closer to you? Was your life a bore before I knew you? Tell me, do I send that certain feeling surging through you? If you love me, tell me that you do. Do what thrill you when I cuddle closer to you? Was your life a bore before I knew you? Tell me, do I send that certain feeling surging through you? If you love me, won't you tell me? Tell me that you love me.
Gentlemen, if you will recall, last week Eddie Cantor entered a horse in a race at Hollywood Park. I bet $100 on that horse and almost made a killing. The horse lost and my wife almost killed me. Don't laugh, that $100 was my rent money and I had to get it somewhere, so I went to the home of my friend, kind, generous Eddie Cantor.
Harry, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 times I told you I can't give you the money. Now, if you need money, why don't you borrow it from a bank?
A bank?
Yes, a bank. The type of place that will lend you money if you have enough deposited to put up a security to prove that you don't need the money in the first place.
Oh, stop, Eddie. Listen, you've got to help me. It's been awful since my wife threw me out.
I know how you feel, Harry. You must miss your cozy little room in your cute little house at Ventura Boulevard.
Eddie, why are you mumbling?
You want all these people to know where there's a vacant room? You'll have nobody left in the studio. Harry, you should never have gambled the rent money, really.
Well, I know, Eddie, but listen, I've got to get that $100 someplace. My wife will kill me if I don't pay the landlord today.
Harry, stop worrying about the landlord.
Well?
Everything will be okay if you just go home and kiss and make up.
I should kiss the landlord?
No. No, your wife.
My wife should kiss the landlord?
No, look, leave everything to me. Let me go over to your house.
You are going to kiss the landlord?
No, your wife.
You're going to kiss my wife?
No, you.
You're going to kiss me? Must be an easier way to get the $100.
Harry, for a man your age, borrowing shouldn't be necessary.
Well, Eddie...
Believe me, when I was your age, I had money.
And now that you're your age, you've still got it.
Harry, are you saying that I hoard my money?
Hoard it? Wherever you take a nickel out of your pocket, the buffalo has to put on sunglasses.
That's not true, Harry. And money doesn't grow on trees. Do you think money comes out of the ground?
Well, yours doesn't. You bury it so deep, it hasn't got a chance.
Harry, don't laugh and quit arguing.
Well, Eddie,
I can't lend you the $100. I have too many expenses. There must be somebody else who... Come in. Oh, it's our orchestra leader, the young man with the horn, Leonard Sousa.
Oh.
Leonard, hello.
Hello.
Leonard, something I want to ask you.
There's something I want to ask you, Mr. Von Zell.
What?
Can you lend me $100?
He beat you to it, Harry.
Yeah.
Mr. Von Zell, you can trust me. After all, I'm Eddie Cantor's orchestra leader.
Well, why do you need $100?
Because I'm Eddie Cantor's orchestra leader.
Leonard, you get a hit in the head in a minute. Where were you all afternoon, Leonard?
Oh, I took my girl on one of those buses that show you the home of the movie stars.
Rubberneck?
No, but I pinched her cheek.
Oh, brother. Leonard Seuss, the young man with the corn. Harry.
What
did he? Wait a minute.
What?
I know how you can earn that $100.
How?
Leonard just gave me the idea.
Well, what idea?
You and I will operate our own sightseeing bus. It's a cinch, Harry. All you have to do is to call out the names of the stars, like Lana Turner, Dorothy L'Amour, as you pass their houses.
Oh, that stuff works.
It's tough calling out Lana Turner and Dorothy L'Amour?
No, it's tough passing their houses. Well, Eddie, besides, what will we use for a bus?
Wait a minute. I think we can borrow a station wagon from my next-door neighbor, Luba Molina.
Luba Molina? Isn't she the Russian star of Roberta at the Philharmonic?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, is she great on the stage.
I know. Opening night, I had a front-row seat in the balcony. I was there.
Eddie, how did you like that low-cut evening gown she wore?
Low-cut evening gown?
Yes.
Harry, that was just a Band-Aid with a zipper. Gosh, did I have fun watching her from my seat in the orchestra.
Yes.
Oh, I had more...
Wait a minute. How did you get in the orchestra?
When she came out in that low-cut gown, fell out of the balcony. Come on, Harry. We'll borrow Luba's station wagon.
Okay.
Come on, we'll go over. Here's Luba Molina's house, Harry. I'll ring the bell.
Здравствуйте, мои дорогие. Замечательные визы. Я вас так люблю. Я вас так уважаю. Это самое лучшее в моей жизни. Я так рада. Which means the postman always rings twice. But the milkman has his own tea.
Luba Molina, that's who it is. Luba, you look gorgeous, and that evening gown.
Oh, it's more suitable for formal wear. This gown hardly fits around the house.
See, it hardly fits around you. Now, listen, Luba.
Don't you think that first you should allow me to introduce yourself to me?
Yeah. I'm sorry. This is Harry Von Zell, and I'm Eddie Cantor.
Yeah, Eddie thought you would recognize him by his pop eyes.
From where I'm standing, both your eyes are popping.
Oh, we were just admiring your house. You see, it's so lovely. It must have cost you a lot of money.
No, I got it very cheap.
Well, I'm glad you moved in. Luba, we're neighbors. I live right next door to your house.
That's why I got it so cheap.
Tell me, how do you like living here in Beverly Hills?
I love it. It reminds me of a little town in Rostov where I was born.
Oh, what was the name of the town?
It was a little place called Petrovskoe Chistuvenie Karchinaya Prekhachatya Dinsomata Ustinskaya, small lake in Rostov.
Oh, I see.
It was right near whistle stop on the Trans-Siberian Railroad.
Aren't you going to ask Luba Molina about her station wagon, you know?
Not yet, Harry.
We'll speak it with
gracefulness. Say, Luba, what do you think of American men?
Oh, American men are so different from the Russian,
yeah?
You see, in Russia, when a man is in love with a girl, he gives her wonderful gifts, like chickens and turkeys and pigs and gooses. But what does a man give you here? Inks and sables and silver foxes and diamonds and annuities.
Yeah, but Luba, what's wrong with minks and sables and silver foxes and diamonds?
Nothing. I love them.
You wear them?
No, I sell them and buy chickens and turkeys and pigs and
Well, I don't blame you, Luba. You know, if the price of meat gets any higher, women will be wearing chickens and gooses and barbecuing tables and meat.
Luba, I can see why men shower you with gifts. You're so lovely. You have such gorgeous black hair and such flashing dark eyes.
Yeah, and such a beautiful station wagon.
Harry.
Oh, you like my station wagon. You know, I bought it from a Russian dealer.
A Russian dealer? What's his name?
Madman Minsk.
Madman Minsk sold you the station wagon?
Yes, and after he gave it to me, I gave to him a kiss.
Yes.
I kissed him, and I kissed him.
Well, how much money did you give him?
Money? What is money?
Now, how would I know? Ask Tanner. Harry, please.
I'm glad you boys admire my station wagon. It is so sweet, so well built. Are you listening to me?
What's that?
Is it not a beautiful body?
Yeah, the one on your station wagon isn't bad either.
Listen, Luba, would you mind if we borrowed your station wagon?
Why, not at all. But I do think you should leave something with me at the department.
She's right, Harry.
Yeah, well, what can we leave with her?
Boys, I will lend you my station wagon. On one condition.
Yeah?
You must have it back here by 6 o'clock because I'm driving to Las Vegas. Get married.
6 o'clock? And we can have the car now?
Yes. The bumpers are loose. The fenders is loose. But still, I will lend it to you.
Oh, a lend loose deal. I made a funny.
Oh, stop that, Harry. I made a funny. And don't worry, Luba. We'll have your station wagon back on time. If it isn't back by 6 o'clock, you can consider it stolen, you know?
Good. Because I will be very unhappy if you do not come back with my station wagon.
Yeah?
Eddie, yeah. My little boiled potato. Yeah. Before you go, let me give you a kiss.
A kiss, Luba?
Yes. One kiss from me, and I know you come back.
One kiss from you, and I know go away.
Come here, Luba. Let me take you in my arms like this.
Oh, I love that.
Now I'll hug you and hug you.
Eddie, stop hugging me like that.
Why, do I remind you of the Russian bear?
No, an American wolf. Oh, I made a funny. That's a funny.
Come on, Harry, let's go.
And so, folks, as our little sightseeing bus toots a reluctant farewell to the home of Ann Johnson, we travel on to the home of that gorgeous screen siren, Dorothy L'Amour. If you wish to see Miss L'Amour sprawled out at a pool in the famous Saran, kindly step to the window at the rear of the bus.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
Come back, Harry, you're driving.
Oh. I forgot. See, I sure wanted to get a good look at her swimming pool.
On the left, folks, you can see Mr. and Mrs. Frank Sinatra about to enter their home. If you look closely, you can see Mrs. Sinatra slipping Frankie through the keyhole.
On the right, the home of the famous movie star, Humphrey Bogart.
Why doesn't he come outside?
If you were inside with Lauren Bacall, would you?
I am not interested in Mr. Bogart's wife. I tell you, I would have nothing to do with Mr. Bogart's wife. Just as sure as I'm sitting next to my wife who can hear every silly lie I'm telling you.
I apologize.
Attention, folks. Directly behind the Sinatra home, we can now see the old dark house of Boris Karloff. Too bad.
What happened?
Sinatra couldn't shoot straight. Lassie buried him again.
How quaint.
Your attention again, folks. We are now nearing the home of that talented, lovable star of stage, screen, and radio, Eddie Cantor. We're just a stone's throw away.
Get your stones now, folks. Send them back. Hey, now, help a poor man make enough money to pay the rent.
Harry, sit down.
Only $100.
Sit down. On the left, folks, the home of Sidney Greenstreet.
Oh, look at that tremendous front porch.
That, madam, is Sidney Greenstreet.
Hey, that place on the corner is the most luxurious-looking mansion in Beverly Hills. Whose place is that?
Anybody. That's the washroom for the gas station next door. Boy, I'm tired, Harry.
Someday, huh?
That's the end of another sightseeing trip, kid.
Yeah.
Only 4 trips so far, and just look at this money we've made. $60.
I know. Well.
One more trip, and you'll have the money, Harry.
Yeah, well, start the motor, Eddie. I'll get him in. Right. Step up, folks. Step right up. Eddie Cantor and Harry Bonzel sightseeing bus.
Hey, you got a license to run a sightseeing bus?
Yeah. License?
Huh?
No. But Eddie Cantor and I are just going to make one more trip. You don't mind.
Mine? I insist on it.
Oh.
We policemen simply adore sightseeing tours.
Well.
Step inside.
Sure.
Officer, where are you driving us?
On the left.
The new home of Eddie Cantor and Harry Von Zell. The beautiful, glamorous Beverly Hills Jailhouse.
Oh, no, no, no!
Harry.
Uh-huh.
What a spot we're in.
Well, sure.
It's already 5:30, and if we don't get the car back to Luba Molina by 6, you'll think it's stolen.
You and your ideas. Look at me rotting away in this awful, dirty old cell. If it wasn't for you, I'd be home now with my wife. My wife? Hey, this is a cozy little cell.
Don't worry, Harry. I think I know where we can raise a $5,000 sale.
Oh, good.
Hey, God. Hey, God, can I make a telephone call?
Yeah, here's the phone. We permit you to make one call.
Thanks.
Well, Eddie, who are you calling?
There's one friend I can depend on. He'll help us out, Harry. He'll really help us out. Hello? Hello? Hello?
How do you do?
Say, this is Eddie Cantor.
Yes?
I need $5,000, Russian.
Too bad. The Russian is dead.
Why, that's silly. The Russian has been working for Eddie Cantor for 7 years.
That's it. He starved to death.
Listen to me, please, please. This is Eddie Cantor, and I'm in jail with Harry Von Zell.
My, oh, my. At your age, juvenile delinquent.
Oh, please stop. I'm in the Beverly Hills jail. How long will it take you to get here?
I'm in Glendale.
Glendale? But I called you home in Hollywood. How could you be in Glendale?
Long court.
Listen, this is no time for nonsense. Harry and I are confined to a cell, and we need your help.
Okay. Break out of jail and meet me in Glendale.
Yes, but if we do, the police will trail us and will be looking for us in Glendale. Why don't you come to Beverly Hills?
In Beverly Hills, the police are looking for me.
Harry, you talk to him, will you?
Yeah. Look, Russian.
Yes?
Please, please, get the money and bail us out. Now, please.
Very well. Hold on to the phone. For you, I will rob my baby's piggy bank.
Oh, good thing of it, Eddie. He's going to break open his baby's piggy bank just for us.
Banjo? No good, Banjo. My wife found out I was robbing the baby's piggy bank.
Who told her?
The piggy squealed.
Oh. Eddie, you take it.
Russian, don't you know that stealing is a criminal offense?
You take money from the sponsor for what you do on the radio?
Of course.
Ha, ha. That ain't a misdemeanor. Yeah.
Oh, please, please, Russian. They'll keep us in jail unless you can raise our $5,000 bail.
$5,000?
Yeah.
I will get that money for you as soon as the bank closes.
When it closes?
Yes.
When it closes?
Yes.
Why don't you get it when the bank is open?
Ha, ha, ha. Silly boy.
Harry.
Oh, boy.
Thank heavens the Russian turned up with our bail. Is he a great kid?
Oh, he's
stuck
right.
Up the money.
Yes.
We're free men, free. Hop in the station wagon and let's get back to Luba Molina. Yeah, we'll get
What's that?
Hurry. It's the same policeman.
What's he want?
Officer, it's 6:05 and we're in a hurry. What did you stop us for?
You're driving a hot car.
A hot car?
Yes. At 6:00, Luba Molina reported that this station wagon was stolen. You're coming back with me to the Beverly Hills jail.
Are you going to be our escort again?
Escort? Looks like we're going steady. This is the only call you'll be allowed to make, Miss Cantor. And remember, you're staying in jail until Molina comes here in person and dismisses the charges.
All right, God. Hello? Hello. This is Eddie Cantor.
This is Luba Molina's secretary. Miss Molina's going to Las Vegas, Nevada on her honeymoon.
Gosh, I remember my honeymoon.
What a memory.
Tell me, have you got any idea how long Miss Molina will be gone?
For years, I think, judging by the things she told me to wash out and send to her as a favor. 50 negligees, 75 pairs of stockings.
Wash out 50 negligees, 75 pairs of stockings? Well, look, get in touch with her and have her call me at the Beverly Hills jail. Goodbye.
Miss Luba Molina calling from Las Vegas. Yeah, take the phone.
Thanks, God. Hello, Luba. This is Eddie Cantor. You've got to come down here right away and get me out of jail.
I can't. friends. I'm on my honeymoon.
But please, Lupa, I'm locked in a cell with Harry Von Zell. Just the two of us, alone.
You're on your honeymoon, too?
No. Lupa, don't you understand? Somebody at your house reported that we stole your station wagon.
Oh, that must have been my stupid secretary.
Yeah, but who told her to do it?
I did. I'm stupid, too.
Lupa, this is important. Would you leave your husband and come down here?
How can I leave him? I love him. Oh, how I love him. He's so handsome, so charming, so marvelous.
Who is your husband? Who is it that can be so wonderful?
How do you do?
You?
Yes.
You've got to come down here and get me out of jail.
I can't. I'm on my money hunt.
No. You mean honeymoon, not money.
Don't tell me what I'm after.
Russian, don't you realize that if Von Zell and I don't get out of jail by Wednesday, we won't be able to broadcast next week? You'll be on the program all by yourself?
I'll be so disappointed. I love to spend each Wednesday with you. As friend to friend, just what can I do?
Oh, goodbye. Goodbye, Russian.
Eddie, looks like we're going to be stuck in this jail for a long time.
Yes, maybe forever. Harry, there's only one thing to make us forget our cares. That's the way. Pick up the guitar, Harry. Let's have some music. Some gay, cheerful music.
Sure. Sioux City Sioux, Sioux City Sioux. Your hair is red, your eyes are blue. I'd swap my horse and dog for you. Sioux City Sioux. Sioux City Sioux, there ain't no gal as sweet as my sweet Sioux City Sioux.
And there they are, ladies and gentlemen, singing though their hearts are breaking. Will Eddie Cantor and Harry Von Zell get out of jail in time to make the broadcast next Wednesday? Will the Widow Malone have her tonsils removed in time for the wedding between John's other wife and B.O. Plenty? Tune in next Wednesday night when Eddie Cantor may not be broadcasting. All of which proves life can be beautiful. Why can't I?
Gentlemen, so magnificent has been the response to our campaign against reckless driving, so heartwarming and inspiring your cooperation, that the headquarters of the National Safety Council finds itself in the position of having to make a very close decision. They have been forced to ask for 24 more hours to decide what city in the United States with a population of 250,000 or more has made the best record in reducing traffic fatalities during May as compared with April. So that the decision may be absolutely just and fair, we have agreed to postpone the announcement of the winning city until next Wednesday, June the 12th. And then, on June 19th, we will go to that city and broadcast the presentation of the Handsome Gold Trophy in person. So, listen for the big announcement next Wednesday, and thanks. Thanks a lot for waiting. We will be back again next week, ladies and gentlemen. Won't you join us? And in the meantime, don't forget the two products to make our Wednesdays with you possible. Eye Panna for the smile of beauty and Touche the beforehand lotion. Eye Panna, Touche, and so remember,
I love to spend each Wednesday with you. As friend to friend, I'm sorry it's true. I'm telling you just how I feel. I hope you feel that way too. Let's make a date for next Wednesday night. I'm here to stay. Will be my delight.
Good night, everybody.
The Eddie Cantor Show is written by Joe Quillen, Irvin Ellinson, and Johnny Rapp.
The Eddie Cantor Program on Tune to Yesterday from June 5th, 1946 on NBC. Part of the network's Thursday night lineup, Cantor was drawing over 17 million listeners a week to his show. So popular was the comedian still, in fact, from the days of vaudeville, that in that same year he appeared on Truth or Consequences as a celebrity guest with his five sons on the air as well, though portrayed by famous radio announcers including Ken Carpenter, Don Wilson, Harlow Wilcox, and Jimmy Wallington. It's an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now we bring you the first nighter program with There's Something in the Air by Anthony Wayne, Olan Soule and Barbara Luddy, starring this March 11th, 1948 broadcast from CBS.
Campana's first nighter program. From the little theater off Times Square. Starring Olan Soule and Barbara Luddy with an all-star cast sent to you by Campana, the quality name in cosmetics. Broadway, theater time. And this evening there's a special date on the theater calendar because a new play is scheduled for its opening night performance at the little theater off Times Square. What's more, you have front row seats with the genial first nighter himself as your host. And here he is.
Good evening, everybody. They say it's going to be a prompt curtain tonight, so let's be off, shall we? Here's my cab. Won't you step in? All right, driver, let's go. Up Broadway, across 42nd Street, and into the famous Times Square district. Theater and supper clubs cluster in this area like pins in a pincushion. Well, here we are.
You know, my dear, you simply never see a short skirt.
Here's the big union at the show.
John is off to call to the El Morocco after the show.
Have your tickets ready, please.
Good evening, Mr. First Nighter. The usher will show you to your seat.
Thank you. We'll go right in. Here we are inside the theater, ladies and gentlemen. And I wish I had time to name all the notables in the audience tonight. But about the play, it's a farce called There's Something in the Air, written by Anthony Wayne. And according to reports from those in the know, it promises a half hour of hilarious entertainment. Olan Soule and Barbara Luddy headline the all-star cast. Mr. Soule will play Ted Drysdale, a lad who's sure of his girl, but not sure of his mother's blessing. Miss Luddy takes the part of Anne Brown, Ted's fiancée, the girl in question. And look at this lineup of talent. There's Polly Bear as Homer, Eleanor Audley as Mrs. Brown, Louis Van Rooten as Mr. Brown, Verna Felton as Mrs. Drysdale, and other equally famous names. I see Frank Worth and his First Nighter Orchestra in the pit, and it's just about time for First Curtain. There's the signal for First Curtain, the house lights are out, and here's the play.
Greetings, Theodore.
All right, come on, Homer. Now, why did you insist that I stop at your house? You know I'm in a hurry.
Patience, my good friend, patience.
Come into my laboratory with me.
Patience?
My mother's arriving tomorrow to meet Annette's family, and they don't know anything about it. How can I be patient?
Right in here.
Now, listen here, you test tube Darwin. I've got important business.
Hey, let me shut the door.
Oh, Homer, for Pete's sake, what do you want with me?
Theodore, I've discovered it. The secret is mine.
Discovered what? What are you talking about?
Even the walls have ears.
Yeah? Where?
Now listen carefully. I've discovered how to make human beings fly.
Oh. Homer, is that what you wanted to tell me?
Think of it. Men and women floating about in the atmosphere like birds, even little children.
Yeah, little children like little gnats. Listen, Thomas Edison, you've been working in this lab so long that your brain spouts fire like a Bunsen burner.
I tell you, I had it. Look, one of these pills, and in 2 minutes you'll be wafting about like a balloon.
Yeah. Crazy as a bedbug.
Take one and see.
No, you get away from me with that.
Why?
Why should I want to waft like a balloon?
No, you'll have occasion.
What do these pills do to you?
They induce what I call heliomorphic. In them, I have combined the active ingredient of helium with a new element, which I call Gattoso.
Helium? You mean you fill up like a balloon when you take that pill?
No. The pill produces a chemical change inside the body, which makes it slightly lighter than air. Oh, Theodore, I declare it is revolutionary.
Yeah, well, it should be. When you get sore at some other gas bag, you just stick them with a pin.
No. true that a gaseous formation does take place, but the body is not distended.
Listen, Homer, you misdirected microbe. Do you think anyone in his right mind would actually swallow one of those pills?
Assuredly. Now, I want you to take some to Annette and her father.
Yes. Not on your life, pal.
But Annette is an enthusiastic amateur pilot, and her father is an inventor of ability.
Yeah,
and if you...
Annette's flying is my biggest headache. And don't mention the old man. Well, he'd invent a mousetrap and get himself caught in it.
But, Dora, my greatest discovery. You must show it to her. I want to know what she thinks.
Homer, haven't I enough trouble? What do you think Mother's going to say when she arrives here in Denver and meets that screwy family of Annette?
Show Annette the pills. She flies an airplane. She'll appreciate them.
Okay. Anything to please you.
Splendid. Now, let's see. What can I put them in? Oh, here we have it. This old aspirin tin. There. Four pills. They look just like aspirin, don't they?
Yeah. So will I if I don't get going.
Well, now, don't forget to tell her about them.
No, I won't. I won't. So long, Homer.
Good night, Theo.
You'd have loved it. I was up 5,000 feet. The clouds were like billowy fluffs of whipped cream, and I just dove through them like that.
Yeah, I know, Ann. But look, let's forget airplanes for just a minute, because I have some important news for you.
Important news? Really?
Yeah. Mother's arriving from New York tomorrow.
Ted, how grand.
She wants to meet my fiancée and her family.
Oh,
I know she's going to be just as crazy about you as I am, darling.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, no one could help but love you. Just one thing.
Yeah, that's my flying.
Yes. You see, Mother's older and more conservative. She detests airplanes, escalators, dial phones. Well, this is the first time in her life she's been west of the Adirondacks.
But what'll I do, Ted?
Well, just don't mention airplanes while she's here, will you?
Well, if that's the way you want it, yes.
Ted, I didn't know you were here.
Well, good evening, Mrs. Brown. How are you?
Well, I haven't been feeling so well. Something the matter with my joint.
Oh.
But I found some new medicine, perfectly marvelous stuff. 6 bottles and you don't know you have any joints. You ought to try it, Ted.
Well, but I don't have any trouble with my joints.
Oh, you ought to take it anyway. It's wonderful. What do you have trouble with?
Well, nothing really, except maybe a cold in the winter once in a while.
Oh, I've got the best medicine for colds. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I just tried everything until I found this. Why, do you know I only had 4 colds last winter taking this medicine?
Ted's mother is arriving in Denver from the east tomorrow.
No, come on here.
Yeah, she's awfully anxious to meet you.
Well, now, why don't you come and bring her for dinner here tomorrow night?
Well, I...
Yes, why don't you, Ted?
Well, that's nice of you, Mrs. Brown, but I don't know whether mother...
Oh, now, no excuses. Tomorrow night for dinner. I'll get Lizzie in to help prepare the meal. What's your mother like? Does she like stewed chicken?
Oh, anything will be all right.
Oh, that's pretty rich. Might give her heartburn. Is she bothered with heartburn?
Well, I don't think so.
Oh, I have the most marvelous remedy for heartburn. Yes, an old shoe cobbler down in Leadville mixes it up. I'll tell your mother about it.
Hey, Mart, where's the screwdriver?
Come on in here, Pa. Ted's here.
Well, hello there, Mr. Brown.
Well, how are you, Ted? Glad to see you.
Glad to see you, sir.
Ted's mother's arriving tomorrow, and she and Ted are coming for dinner tomorrow night.
Well, maybe we'll get something decent to eat for a change, hey, Annie?
What do you mean? You know with your gout there's only a few things you can eat. Now, if you'd only take that medicine I told you about.
Oh, you and your medicine.
Figured out any new inventions lately, Mr. Brown?
Oh, did I tell you I'm inventing a tailor-made razor?
No, what's that?
Well, it's like a mask made to fit on your face. Just clamp it on, press button, take it off, and there you are, all shaved.
Say, that sounds like a dandy, Mr. Brown.
Yeah, it's a humdinger. Can't figure out why it won't work.
That's always the trouble. Nothing you invent ever works.
There you are, Ted. No one ever appreciates a genius. Say, I wonder if you'd help me move a box into my workshop.
Well, is it heavy?
It's full of iron and steel.
Well, I better get my coat off then. Here you are, Ann. Catch.
Oh, I'm sorry. It fell on the floor.
Right.
I'll get it.
Come on, Mr. Brown. I'll help you.
Thank you.
Oh, Mother.
I was just wondering, Ann. We'll have dumplings. And what'll we have for a vegetable?
Mother, I'm scared to death of meeting you guys there.
Oh, nonsense, Annette. Why?
Well, she's such high society and from New York. What if she doesn't like me?
Well, I guess we're just as good as she is. I'll tell her a little bit about my family tree.
Well, I'm so anxious to make a good impression. Please don't tell her about all your medicine.
Well, maybe she'll need some.
Oh, don't, please.
Well, if you say so.
And can't we keep Father quiet about his invention?
Just leave your father to me.
Well, oh, here they come now.
Well, we got rid of that with neatness and dispatch.
Yeah. You know, I really think I should be going.
Well, now we'll see you for dinner tomorrow night, Ted.
Yes, indeed.
Here's your coat.
Thanks, dear. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night,
night
folks.
Oh, say, what's this on the floor?
Oh, it's a little tin of aspirin.
Hmm. Well, I'll just put that here on the table. I may need some of that.
And the curtain comes down on the first act of tonight's play in the little theater off Times Square.
Smoking in the outer lobby or downstairs.
Night as they're hurrying down the aisles to their seats, the lights are dimmed, and here's the second act of There's Something in the Air.
Mother?
Yes, I'm down here in the dining room, Annette.
Oh, how do I look?
Oh, lovely, dear. Perfectly lovely.
Oh, Mother, I'm absolutely petrified.
Oh, nonsense. Now, we'll show his mother some real Western hospitality.
How's the dinner coming?
Well, it better be good. I read Emily Post all morning and drilled it into Lizzie all afternoon.
Mother, couldn't we take those antimacassars off the chairs for tonight?
Why, Annette, they're very handsome.
Well, I know, Mother, but I don't think people in Eastern society use them. Just for tonight, please.
All right.
Good heavens, did you hear that?
I'll say I did. And if that Lizzie has broken any of my best china...
Hey, Mom! Mom!
What is it, Father? Mother's in the kitchen.
Oh, your mother made me get into this gosh-darn stiff collar tonight. I just hope Ted's old lady's worth all this suffering.
Oh, you look sweet, Father.
Well, I don't feel sweet. I feel rotten. Got a splitting headache.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought maybe your mother might have something out of all her medicines for a headache.
Oh, wait, here's some aspirin on the living room table. I put it here last night. There, take that tablet. That'll fix your headache.
Well, thank you, Annie. My head feels as big as a balloon.
Oh, of all the buttered-fingered lummoxes.
Would she break?
The gravy boat and my cut glass pickles is. Oh, I'm a nervous wreck. What are you doing down here, Pa?
You're in a headache. Any objections?
No, but you go and put your coat on. They'll be here any minute.
You mean I gotta wear a coat?
Of course you do.
Oh, a stiff collar and a gosh-darn coat.
Oh. Oh, Annette, I hope for your sake things go right. Oh, my head is... simply bursting.
Well, Father just took an aspirin. Why don't you? It'll help your headache.
Yes, give me one. Of course, they're not as good as my headache milk, but they'll do. Oh, thank you, dear.
I talked to Ted on the phone this afternoon. He said his mother was having trouble getting used to the altitude out here.
Well, maybe it'll make her a little dizzy and she won't be able to stay so long.
Here he comes.
Where?
Mother, look!
Oh, what in the name of goodness do you think you're doing?
He's floating right up. He's on the ceiling.
Well, what do you think of this, Maude? Imagine me up here on the ceiling.
Oh, listen, you old coyote. You come down from there this minute.
Well, I would if I could, but I don't seem to be able to do nothing about it.
Oh, Mother, he's playing a joke.
Well, it ain't funny.
You know, I never realized till now how things look to a fly.
Horatio Brown, what's holding you up there on that ceiling?
That's me. I just suddenly found myself up here. Say, Ma, your ceiling's dirty.
Oh. Mother, they're liable to ring the bell any minute.
Don't worry, dear. I'll get a broom and sweep that old buzzard down from there.
Mother!
Oh, Anne! I'm going up in the air, too!
I know. I see you.
That's a ticket, Ma. Come on now.
Mother, what's making you do this?
Oh, I wish I knew. I've never done it before.
You suppose it's something we ate, Maud?
I'll bet this is another of your wild-eyed inventions, Horatio Brown.
No, it ain't. I'm innocent. I just floated up here like you did.
But can't you get down?
Well, I don't know how.
Do you feel all right?
Fine. A little gas on my stomach, maybe.
You've always been full of hot air. Wait till I grab this chandelier.
No, I don't mind this up here at all.
takes a load off my feet. I think I'll stretch out.
You do nothing of the kind. You invent a way to get us down on that floor.
But it just isn't possible for people to float in the air like this.
That ain't possible, Annette. But your mother and I are doing it.
Oh, but what in heaven's name will Mrs. Drysdale think?
It'll be mild to what I'm already thinking.
Oh, I feel like a fairy dancing around here on the ceiling.
A little heavy for a fairy, Maud. More like a Boeing bomber.
If you can just get down around the chandelier, Mother, I'll stand on a chair and pull you down.
You like landing a Zeppelin.
I'm trying to work down to the chandelier land.
What do you do if you get her down? She'll need an anchor to hold her in her chair.
Oh, you're a big help. Why don't you do something?
Why should I? I like it here. Just wondering if my clothes will float when I take them off to go to bed.
Oh, it's the front door. They're here.
Oh, Ann, I'm so sorry. Oh, this is dreadful.
What'll I do?
Bring them in.
Oh, I can't. She'll think we're all crazy.
Well, ain't we?
Ann, nobody answered the front door, so we just walked right. Great balls of fire. What's happened to your mother and father?
In the name of mercy, Ted, what kind of people are these hanging on chandeliers?
Oh, Mrs. Drysdale, I'm so sorry. We're so up in the air.
Up in the air? I heard the altitude in Denver was high, but I didn't notice how high people walked on their ceilings.
Oh, Mrs. Drysdale, I hope you'll excuse me for not coming down.
Indeed.
But, Anne, what started this?
I haven't the slightest idea. All of a sudden, Father just floated up like a feather, and in a few minutes, Mother followed him.
I tell you, Ted, we had roast duck last night. I suppose that might have done it.
Do you mean to tell me, Ted, that this is the family you propose marrying into?
Oh, Mrs. Drysdale, this is most unusual. We don't do this all the time.
Oh, well, that's a comforting thought.
Oh, I forgot, Mother. This is Annette.
Annette, huh? Seems to me it would be enough. Ted, this place is a madhouse.
Well, Mother, I don't know what's happened, but if you'll just wait a minute, maybe we can straighten this out.
Oh, to think of my son marrying into a band of trapeze artists.
Listen, Mrs. Brown, I'm taking my coat off.
Yes.
And now I'm going to hang on to one sleeve and toss the coat up to you.
Oh.
You grab it, and then I can pull you down.
Oh, Ted, you're a genius.
You ready?
Yes.
Here it comes.
I got it.
Oh, grand, Ted.
All right. Now we pull you down. One, two, three, and you're down.
Oh, you don't know what this means to me. I feel like I've been in another world.
Do sit down here, Mother.
Yes.
Oh.
Hey.
Oh, mercy alive, look at her. She's floating back up again.
I tell you, you can't keep a good woman down.
Oh, Mother.
Oh, it's no use. I don't know what I've done to deserve this.
Marty, you're an angel. If you ever venture outdoors, you'll go to heaven sure shooting.
Oh, this is more than I can stand.
Say, I just thought of something. Has Homer been over here today?
Well, no, why?
I'll bet my right leg he knows something about
this. Well, let's call him up.
No, I'm going over and get him. I'll bring him back in 10 minutes.
Ted, now, Ted, you can't leave me here with these people.
Please don't worry, Mrs. Drysdale. We're really all right.
Oh, this excitement. It's given me a murderous headache.
Oh. Why don't you take one of these aspirins, Mrs. Drysdale? I'll get you some water.
Oh, yes. Yes, I need one, dear. Give it to me.
Here, this will quiet your nerves.
Oh, dear, I hope so.
Mrs. Drysdale, I hope you're not going to judge us completely by this dreadful first impression.
Oh, really, Mrs. Drysdale? I can trace my ancestry back to the Robins of Boston.
Robins, eh? I think it ought to be the Bullfinches of Brooklyn.
Not bad, Mrs. Dry, not bad.
I'm really a very home-loving person, and I do love Ted.
Young lady, if Ted and I ever get out of here alive, I'll take him so far away from here, he'll never see you again.
Oh, Mrs. Drysdale.
Wait a minute. What's the matter with me? Oh, I feel so strange.
Mrs. Drysdale, you're taking off.
Oh, mercy. Mercy to goodness, it's gotten me now. Help me. Help me.
I can't. You're up too high.
Ow.
Bumped her head on the ceiling.
sure were a pretty sight taken off, Mrs. Drysdale.
Oh, I knew if I stayed in this house, it would happen to me, too.
Yep, we're all floating in the same air now.
It must be some kind of a disease, and I've caught it.
Well, then why doesn't Anne fly around?
Yes. What makes you immune, Annette?
I don't know, and I'm beginning to think there must be something the matter with me because I don't.
No, sir. You're all wrong.
Well, what do you mean? Do you know the cause of this?
Well, floating around up here, I've been doing a little noodling on the subject. Have you noticed that it's only us old folks who are affected?
Why, yes, you're right.
Well, what's that got to do with it, Pa?
Well, that's what I'm coming to. Now, don't the Bible say, ashes to ashes, dust to dust?
Yes, those are the very words.
Well, don't dust blow around and float in the air?
Of course.
Well, we're just getting on in age. Here we are. All right. Soon we'll just return to dust.
Mr. Brown, I think you're right.
You mean we're going to dry up and blow away?
Yep, Maud. It won't be long before we'll just see something that gets into people's eyes.
You know, realizing that, it's given me a different outlook on life already.
Oh, it scares me.
Oh, son, you've got to go sometime. This sure is a novel way.
Mrs. Brown, you know your husband is a very unusual man.
Well, I guess I never appreciated Horatio.
His is an amazing philosophy, a rich, deep understanding of life and the world.
That's right, Mrs. Dry. I'm a philosopher.
Oh, I feel happier up here by the chandelier. Now that I have your outlook of life, Mr. Brown.
Well, as long as we're stuck up here, we might as well have some fun. Ever been up in an airplane, Mrs. Fly?
No, I never have. But this experience makes me think I might enjoy it.
Well, Annette down there is a wonderful pilot. She flies her own plane.
Oh, really? Annette. If I ever get down, would you take me for a ride in your aeroplane?
Why, yes, I'd love to, Mrs. Drysdale.
Oh, wait a second, Mrs. Drysdale. I'll give you a push over to the other side of the room. That'll sort of give you an idea how it feels.
Oh, Horatio, don't start getting funny with Mrs. Drysdale.
No, really, I want him to. Go ahead, push me, Mr. Brown.
All right. There you go.
That looks like it's fun. Push me the other way.
Well, wait till I place myself against the chandelier. All right. There you go.
Oh, gee, I feel so lonesome down here on the floor. Isn't there any way I can get up there, too?
Ain't old nothing, eh?
Oh. Oh, listen. Well, there comes Ted back.
Won't he be surprised to see me up here?
Homer's with him. Ted.
Yeah?
Ted, look what's happened since you left.
What do you mean, Aunt? Jumping Jupiter, Mother.
Yes, Ted. I'm up here, too, but don't worry. I'm enjoying it.
Hooray, hooray. It works. It works.
What works?
Look at them up there. Even your mother. I never dared hope that anyone that size would have said.
What do you mean, that size?
Homer, what do you know about this? Know about it? I know everything about it, my good friend. My pills induced the ascension, didn't they?
What pills?
The pills I gave you last night.
Holy smoke, I put them in this pocket. They're not there.
Wait a minute, Ted. Were they in an aspirin tin?
Precisely, Annette. A little aspirin box.
Oh, for goodness sake, then I'm to blame. They fell out of your pocket last night, Ted. Here they are. I've been giving them as aspirin.
Oh, no. Thank you, Annette. Thank you profusely. You've proved that my discovery really works.
You mean you're responsible for this, Homer McPhee?
Yes, ma'am. Isn't it wonderful?
You know, son, I think you've got something there.
Then we're not blowing away dust to dust?
No, I guess not, Mom.
Oh, but it was such a lovely thought.
Now, listen here, Homer. Your pills got them up there. Now, how do you get them down?
Why, all they have to do... Oh, I never thought of that.
Never thought of it?
No, I devoted all my time to getting them up. I forgot about the rest.
Oh, good grief.
Well, never mind, Ted. Now we're perfectly happy. Oh, help! I'm falling!
Look out! Here comes Father!
What a bump.
What brought you down, Father?
Well, don't ask me. I just came down like I went up for no good reason. Oh, my ankle. Oh,
Homer, do you know what happened?
I'm sorry, Theodore, but I'd have to examine Mr. Brown with my instrument.
No, you don't.
The effect of the pill may have worn off.
Oh, help! Look out, they're dropping like flies, Thorne!
It's your mother, Anne.
Oh, poor mother.
Oh, it's all right. I fell on the sofa. Get ready for Mrs. Drysdale. She'll be falling next.
Yeah. Come here, Homer. Get ready to catch Mother. Here, I'll help you.
Here, we're ready.
Catch her, catch her. There she comes.
All right, come on, Mother. You're not going to let this influence you against Annette and her family.
Influence me? Well, I should say not. Annette's a dear. She's going to take me for a ride in her aeroplane.
What?
Yes, and her mother's as sweet as can be. But her father... Oh, there's a man.
Well, then you mean I can marry him?
Why, of course. The sooner the better.
Well, I'll be. Hey, Homer.
Yes, Theo?
You have any more of those pills at home?
Oh, yes. A whole crock full of them.
Oh, boy, come on, Ann. Let's us swallow a couple and take off together.
As the curtain falls on the final act of another original play in the little theater off Times Square, the people in this body are in front of the footlights. The audience is giving them an ovation. The play's a hit. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, we want to issue a special invitation to you and your family to join us again when another brand new play entitled The Green Leprechaun will be presented in the little theater off Times Square. It's a love story, the kind that tugs at your heartstrings as it puts a smile on your lips. Your whole family will enjoy it. Be sure to join us next week, same time, same station. And ladies, you'll never know how pretty you can be until you try Magic Touch. Now we move out of the theater and into the suite.
Here's your cab, Mr. First Matter.
Thank you. Good night.
The First Nighter program on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS radio broadcast from March 11th, 1948, and the curtain comes down on this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levinier. It's been a pleasure.